So with the football season over and baseball just kind of getting underway, we're in that weird period right now where it's nice to actually have some racing back in our lives, and it's good to be back with you as well. For the first time in a couple of months here, it's the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330. New time this year, 10 a.m. to 11, as we're going to be discussing all things both locally and on the national scene. For NASCAR this week, coming up, the biggest race of the year, they put it right at the very beginning. My name is Jackson. I am joined here by the returning man who loves racing so much that he decided to go into business and become a person who works in traffic. Hello, yep. Thomas.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going well, man. Good to have you back for year number two. He is, yep, Thomas Gomez, and you're going to be going out of town. You're going to be watching the 500 somewhere, aren't you?
I am. I'm going to visit family in Missouri, and it's our Kansas crew. So everyone we go to the Kansas races with, we're just all going to get together and watch the 500.
How big of a crew do you guys have when you you get together?
Boy, it's gotten bigger since last year, so we have a few more members. It's 36.
Wow, yeah. 36 people. That's amazing. A NASCAR party. And that's something, man, I wish that there were a little bit more of. And so we'll talk more about that trip. We'll talk more about the weekend itself. This year, we were joined by the next person who's going to be joining us this year a couple of times in 2019 for our first season. But on a more permanent, consistent basis this year, we are very happy to have the program director of 104.9 The X, as well as Middays.
Boss man.
Yeah, the boss man, too.
Yeah,
we got to watch what we say around here.
Yeah, we do.
Lou Lombardo. Lou.
Yeah. Glad that you're here, man. Me too, man. This is nothing but fun to sit here and talk racing with you guys. So I'm looking at it. This is like I'm excited to have this time to come in and just talk to people who care about it as much as I do. Because most of the time I'm complaining to my wife about it. And she's like, I don't even know what you're saying. I don't know what half that stuff means.
Right.
And to talk to you guys, it's like, oh, they get it. See, I'm not the crazy one in the conversation.
Yeah.
It's just me.
No, I'm with you, man. And a couple of races that we've been to over the last couple of years, it's been a lot of fun. Dude, it's nice to be talking about something that's not the Astros cheating scandal and what the baseball teams are going to look like in town. We've got a lot coming up on the show today. We've got Scott Paddock from the president of Chicagoland Speedway, who was kind enough earlier this week to jump on and join us. You'll hear him in a little while. Plus, we'll preview the Daytona 500, but over the course of about 3 or 4 months, a lot of things have happened in NASCAR, Thomas.
A lot of things that happened. I wish I would have been keeping track, because it's hard to look back at this point and cover 4 months.
What are some of the changes that we're looking at?
One of the first things I saw was Hall of Famer Junior Johnson died from Alzheimer's at the age of 88. He raced in the 50s and early 60s and has won 50 races in his career.
Absolute legend.
Yeah. Absolute legend.
And somebody who, as soon as that news broke, it was all over Twitter. A lot of drivers eulogizing him. Of course, you see Dale Earnhardt Jr. Talking about some of the best memories of Junior Johnson. And he's one of the pioneers of the sport that really helped the thing go into the next phase, into the popular years in the 80s and 90s. So rest in peace to Junior Johnson.
That's a great way to put it, as pioneer. I was thinking like founder, but then couldn't think of the word. So that's perfect. And then coming into the 2020 season, we will not have a primary sponsor for the Cup Series. So it's just simply the NASCAR Cup Series, and there's just four premier sponsors. So we'll have Coca-Cola, Busch Beer, Geico, and Xfinity.
Lou, what do you think about that?
I'm all right with it. I mean, it could be a sign that, you know, times are tough, right? But you still have four premium names throwing cash at this thing. So it's not like they found some small business that's, you know, kind of flimsy. These are four premier names to throw money at these races, at NASCAR. And I don't know. I do kind of like the idea of it just being the NASCAR Cup Series as opposed to having
this.
Yeah,
it falls in line with other sports too.
It does.
And is that the name that we're going to be running with this year? That's what they're calling themselves, as NASCAR Cup Series.
NASCAR Cup Series. Yep.
I think the best part about it is that the post-race and victory lane is not going to have that awkward interaction with the Monster Energy girl standing behind the driver at the very end, just trying to get in there with the pearly white smile and you know, the long blonde hair. It just was an awkward thing in 2019.
Yeah, right. Read the room. You know what I mean? That those days are gone, and it's fine that those days are gone. I did nothing for me seeing them stand there. Totally fine not having that.
It was such a 90s thing in 2019.
Totally. Totally 90s thing.
What else we got coming up this year, Thomas?
Well, going to talk about Larson. He didn't have an off season, and he won his first national Chili Bowl victory.
He's been busy.
Yeah, he was racing more in the off season than he was during the season.
He doesn't have an off season.
No.
And he got a bloodshot eye. Did you guys see that?
No.
From one of the wrecks he had, one eye was just completely red. I can show you a picture during the break.
Oh, wow.
He did do his NASCAR promo shoots all of his pictures with a bloodshot eye. And it's like, it kind of looks, you know, badass if you look at it because he has one red eye, which is pure red.
That's kind of awesome.
Kind of flashbacks to Davey Allison when you're talking about that after he got into that wreck years and years ago. But there was one time where he was wearing the sunglasses and he had to take them off during a post-race interview and he just had total bloodshot eyes.
Yeah.
Kyle Larson coming up for a big year for him as well. This is a contract year for him, Thomas?
It is. He's a free agent next year. So,
yeah, but everybody knows where he's going to end up if he walks, if he doesn't get re-signed.
Where's he going to end up?
I mean, he's Hendricks. Come on.
You think so, Thomas?
I think it's likely he'll end up in the 48. I really do.
If Hendrick allows him to run outside of NASCAR, which Hendrick typically doesn't do.
That's going to be the determining factor for him.
Right, because he's not going to give up the dirt racing. No, it's what he does, and it's what he's really, really good at. Right. He's good at driving in NASCAR. He really is, and I think he's just gotten the short end of the stick for a while. But he's great on dirt. He's great, and I can't see him walking away from that.
I could see him in the 14, personally.
You think Clint's out?
A little bit.
Really?
I think Clint is... Well, okay, if we're going to start throwing hot takes around and 6 minutes into the first episode of the year, then hey... No, I could see, because Tony Stewart's cool with him running dirt, and that's going to be the selling point. You want to do whatever you want to do? Fine.
Just Tony will make him run at Eldora.
Tony will make him run at Eldora, but Tony also is all about results, and he knows that there's a world of potential in this guy, and Kyle Larson being somebody who Tony is, they can definitely bond if they haven't already about all the different racing and all the dirt tracks that they've been to.
And that's a likely possibility, too. I think they have that in common, so that could start a conversation, too. You know, for next year.
Going to be a big year for him, but he at least had a little bit of success. Of course, we're talking about Kyle Larson returning in the 42 this year in a contract year. Thomas, what else is coming up?
Well, similar to how last year we talked about the package for, what, half the season?
Oh, okay. At least.
Whole season.
Yeah. At least.
I think this year we're going to be talking about the 2021 car. That's all everyone can talk about is the next-gen car. What's it going to look like? What's it going to be? I saw there was a test picture. They had the tires and rims. It was just like our street cars.
Yeah,
that's low profile.
That's what they're saying. It's going to be back to the drive it on Sunday, buy it on Monday vibe. That's what they want to go for.
Really?
Yeah, that's what the everybody kind of keeps going, you know, bringing up that phrase because they're going to look more like what you can buy.
And it really should be. I mean, if you look at what's on the track now, we can't just go to the store and buy that or to the dealership and buy that.
Yeah.
It's going to look different. So,
and I think it's going to have more, I don't want to say amenities, but it's going to have more features like
cruise control.
I think they said there's like rack and pinion steering going into it. There's independent suspension for the back end going into it. So there's things like that that we're used to in cars that they don't have in the current car.
They're listening.
It's going to be different.
And it's going to be cheaper for the teams is what it sounds like.
Yep. It's going to put teams that, you know, are not Gibbs in the hunt. They'll be able to actually compete because you won't have to spend, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars on the car. It's going to make it a lot more competitive for people.
We don't need to have complete parity in the sport where somebody random wins every single week. We just need a little bit more because Gibbs dominated last year. And if we can somehow get to a point where the 95 is capable of winning a race on an occasional Sunday, that would be amazing. And so this is some very good news. I haven't been following that as much as you guys have. So That's a positive going into this year. What else we got, Thomas?
Well, I'm interested to see the All-Star race this year. Are they going to incorporate any elements for next year into this race? Because the All-Star race, they always test something. They always test something new. I think last year it was, air vents or something in the hood?
It was.
They tried something different.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see what we'll see this year. But speaking of cars, Chevrolet has changed the front and rear bumpers of their car for 2020. I don't know. Like the Camaros, the nose, if you will, comes to a point, and it made drafting and all that stuff really hard last year. So they kind of smoothed that out and did the same thing to the back bumper. They smoothed it out so it's a little bit easier and you don't get so turned around, I guess.
Yeah. I don't think the Clash was any sign of what we're going to see from the Chevys this year. The Clash was just crazy. That's not a sign of what we're going to see from Daytona on Sunday. It's just not.
That was such a two-parted race. It was way too long for the first 50 laps. You're just thinking, okay, it's all going to come down to something. Whoever's going to be leading at the very end. And then it was just Crash City.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever survived.
That's really all it was.
Yeah, Jones didn't win that race. I think I texted you that. He just survived. That's all it was. And barely, because his car was destroyed.
Yep.
Destroyed. Denny pushed him across the finish line.
Five cars left, right? Is that what it was at the very end?
I think four or five, yeah.
Insane. There was a point where they couldn't even get to the line before they were going sideways.
They managed to do this in 75 laps. They managed to destroy that many cars in just 75 laps.
And truthfully, they managed to do it in about 20 laps.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Because the race was the race for the longest time, and you're just waiting around for the final 10, 20 laps or so, and then all of that drama started happening. There's been a couple of Daytona races like that here recently, but we'll talk more about that in the third segment here.
NASCAR is changing the stage lengths for 16 races this year, including the one at Daytona tomorrow. So what they're doing is they're kind of, if you think about last year or the year before, the stages were designed for 450 horsepower cars. And then we had the switch last year to the 550 horsepower. So the stage lengths weren't really quite that accurate for the car or designed for that. I described it best as like, or thought of it best as like 25, 25, 50. Like if you look at percentages of how the race is split up. And this year it's going to be more of a third, a third, a third. So like Daytona is going to be 65, 65, 70. So they're almost all equal stages, and that eliminates any fuel races, you know, fuel mileage races towards the end there.
Okay.
So that'll kind of switch things up a little bit.
Yeah, it makes the math easier.
Mm-hmm.
There were some tracks where it became kind of whatever happened on pit road ended up determining the race, and it wasn't necessarily about who had the best car. So I could kind of see that being a good thing. So far, starting out in the 500. Might as well try it, right?
Yeah.
Try it until something works.
Right.
Because it couldn't, you know, I mean, you start out with something, and if it's bad, NASCAR at least has shown that they've made changes mid-season for a couple of things here. They did a couple of times last year for various things. So.
Well, under the new regime, at least they're open to not just saying, no, it's the best. This is how it's got to stay. If it doesn't work, they fix it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and something I wasn't a fan of this year with one of the changes, last year they made things super simple, and the halfway point was the end of stage two. So if weather was coming, it was, at the end of stage two, we just have to make it that far. Well, now we're back to halfway, and we have to start doing that math again. Figure out where that's going to be.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I'm not a big fan of, but you know what? We'll get over it. If we move into driver and team news, Kevin Harvick signed an extension, keeping him at Stuart Haas until 2023.
Lou, are you surprised by this?
No. He's made it very clear that he wants to drive until that is completely out of his system before he goes into the booth. He's going to be great when he does go to TV because he's just got it. He knows what he's doing. He's a champion. He understands it. All that. He's going to blow Jeff Gordon out of the water. But he has made it very clear he wants to stay on that track because he's seen too many guys walk away too early and regret it, even though they've gone on to have success in the booth and that kind of a thing in broadcasting. But I think he wants to make sure it's out of his system and he's done all he can do and then take on it. Because you're going to be going 4 years, going 10 years. What's the difference? You're going to be able to talk into a microphone.
Yeah.
You might not be able to get into a car and drive in 10 years, but you can certainly talk about it.
Thomas, are you surprised by the length of the contract that he signed?
Yes and no. I was surprised that it went out, 3 years, but because I was expecting him to step into a broadcasting role. I really was. He did a great job last year at the Xfinity and
awesome
and races that he called. So I was really expecting that to happen. Will he? He's under contract till 23, but is there a clause where he can get out of it if something happens in the next year or two? We'll see.
That is true. It can be kind of like a lifetime contract if something does come up or if he does lose that itch to start driving or to continue driving going forward. So I guess looking at the years, it's just more of like, hey, you're going to stay with us for the rest of your career because I don't imagine that he's going to stick around 5 years into the future. But crazier things have happened.
Yeah, for sure. Another one, Cole Pearn has stepped down as Truex's crew chief.
See, that surprised me.
I didn't see that coming.
That surprised everybody.
That was just out of nowhere. And the changes that happened in the last couple of years for that team, having to move from Colorado because, was it Furniture Row Racing?
Yeah.
They had to fold. Unfortunately, had to fold. So they had to move from Colorado to the Carolinas to be with the Gibbs team. And I just don't think that was something that fit Cole Pearn's lifestyle.
I agree. You moved in with the Patriots, and I don't think he was fitting in or liked the Belichick style. You know what I mean? Not to make it sound like, Gibbs Racing is hard on the racers or anything like that, but I don't think whatever was going on over there was right for him, and I think that's why he walked.
It's got to be something like that, where he just...
I mean, that's a huge shift,
too. It wasn't
too.
As fun. You got to move your entire family, too, because he's got a couple of kids. He's, I can understand why he wouldn't want to do it anymore, and he'll go off and do something else. I think he's completely out of racing this year, too.
I believe he is, yeah.
As he said, he wanted his official note was that he wants to spend time with family, but I thought I read somewhere that he's going to be owning a ski resort.
Really?
So it's like, that's a huge, huge change from racing. But
for real.
So I'm interested to see.
Ski racing resort, maybe.
Hey, it could be. You never know. Could start something new here.
Yeah, who knows? But you're not going to find too many of those in Carolina. So if that was a hidden passion of his, or at least a way to continue making a little bit of money for not having to really go and maintain a lot, nah, good for him. But I would love to see him back at some point. I just don't know if that's going to happen, because typically when these surprise things, these surprise retirements happen, I was still waiting for Carl Edwards to return. You know what I mean?
I still am.
I would love for him to, but sometimes if you're just not, you're not loving what you're doing anymore, then it's time to walk away. But it's going to be a big year for Truex.
It is.
Because is it the driver? Was it the team?
It's going to be very telling.
Was
it's
it the crew chief?
It's going to be very telling what, who is really, you know, pulling the strings there. And maybe he'll do just fine. But I don't think he's a bad driver by any stretch. But
no.
It makes a big difference who you have on top of that pit box, which, I mean, look at Penske. They did musical crew chiefs with everybody. I mean, everyone's got a different crew chief this year. So it clearly makes a big difference who you have on top of that pit box.
With Cole Pearn, Martin Truex Jr.'s career has never been better. He really reached an apex well over a decade into his career as well. So at least he's in a good spot. He is with the New England Patriots of the NASCAR series.
It's not going to be the equipment he's on. That's for sure.
That is true. That is true. And you mentioned, Lou, the Keselowski switch up. And the Team Penske switch up. Thomas, what do we've got Paul Wolf going to Joey Logano's team.
Right. So Wolf used to be with Keselowski. Todd Gordon used to be with Joey Logano. And Jeremy Bullens used to be with Ryan Blaney. Well, now Wolf is Logano, Bullens is Keselowski, and Gordon is Blaney. And I think, if you look at this, you gave the most current champion on the Penske roster there as far as crew chiefs go to the future. You gave him to Blaney to kind of line up. This kid's the future. This guy has proven that he can win.
Yeah.
Keselowski won as well, but Joey just won 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I kind of think that was like a, here, let's see if you really are the future. Go for it. Does it screw the other guys? I don't know if it screws them, but it definitely gives them guys that haven't won nearly as recent.
And
especially Keselowski.
And he's been around long enough to where he kind of gets it and he could help out. As long as he stays away from the fences and the poles.
Well, he had, he can't drive the car onto the track, but once it gets on the track,
no, he's fine.
He'll have a guy take it out there for him, and then he'll get in on the track. He'll be fine. He was talking the other day about the switch, and you know, they ask him the typical, like, how's it going? You guys feeling each other out? He's like, yeah, I don't know. It's not too different yet, and but we'll see. You know, ask me at the end of the season. Like, and it kind of seemed like, oh.
The season's just starting. How can you say anything for sure right now?
Right. Well, yeah, Joey Logano, on the other hand, was like, oh, it's so different from what it used to be. This and that. And Keselowski was like, yeah, it's pretty much the same. I don't know. It just seemed like
Yikes. He
wasn't super pumped about it. But then again, Joey Logano makes, you know, going to the bathroom sound like it's going to be a party. Oh, it's going to be great. I'm going to go. But he's always happy and upbeat about everything. And Keselowski is, you know, you can find your moments with him. But
it's a big smile on his face. He's happy that he's got Paul Wolf now. It helps out Joey Logano. We'll see if that affects Brad Keselowski going forward. We've got to talk about them going into Daytona in the third segment here. But, Thomas, is there anything else that we've missed yet?
I got two more things real quick. Daniel Suarez, at the end of last season, we didn't know where he was going to be, if anywhere. And it was announced that he will be in the number 96 for Gaunt Brothers Racing. So he is coming back, more of a low-budget team if you compare them to Stuart Haas Racing. So
glad he's back, but that guy's had a raw deal for the first couple years.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
He's been bounced around a lot.
He is, and if we're going to make another football reference, he is Josh Rosen to me right now, where you where you start out your career on a team that's not very good, and then you go to another one where you're a year in, you're not really comfortable yet, and Stuart Haas just dumped him, just like Gibbs just dumped him, and...
But he was a good driver. He is a good driver.
I feel like he's capable. He's had a couple of top fives there in the last year. And I don't know. I hope that he has some staying power. I think that being the only Mexican-born driver, I think that there's any kind of success he has is going to be great for the sport. But I also think that he is an extremely talented guy that, if given the right opportunity for an investment of time longer than a year, could pay dividends for a team.
There's more than enough potential there.
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
And the last one?
Last one. It's nothing new. 2020, we have a new schedule. So we're going to start the season and end the regular season with Daytona. And then we have a doubleheader for Pocono, and the championship is in Phoenix this year. So lots of scheduling changes this year. Oh, and we have a 2-week bye week for the Olympics
yeah.
this summer.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think they're still going to run the Xfinity and trucks over that 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah, they're giving NBC those 2 weeks for cover the Olympics.
All right. Well, we're going to a couple of racetracks in the area here during those times.
There you go. Yep.
I'm not a huge fan of summer basketball. I'm not a huge fan of the summer Olympics. I was when I was younger, but like, give me racing, man. You know, give me something like that. So we're ending the regular season in Daytona.
Yep. Starting and ending.
That's just going to be a madhouse. You know, the Clash? That's going to be what it was. That final race, guys, are just going to be
Your last chance to make it.
That's it. On a crazy track. That has so much amazing potential.
Over under 3.5 cars remaining in that race at the very end when the checkered flag waves. It's going to be somewhere around that.
It's going to be nuts. That's it. That's your last chance in. That is it. And guys are going to give it everything they possibly can.
Earlier in the week, we talked with Scott Paddock, the president of Chicagoland Speedway, about these schedule changes, and we're looking forward to catching back up with him, not just about the schedule changes in NASCAR this season, but also a little bit of Daytona talk. And what's new going into the season for the Chicagoland Speedway this year? A very good deal that he's talking about right now, too, that if you're going to be watching the Daytona 500, You might want to make an investment in something. And we'll talk about that with Scott Paddock next. For Thomas Gomez, Lou Lombardo, I'm Jackson. It's the Racing Rundown.
The Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330. Welcome back to the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330 and SportsFanRockford.com.
He is Scott Paddock, president of the Chicagoland Speedway. So it's been a pretty short offseason, Scott. It's good to be talking to you again here. The shortest offseason in sports, kind of here to save us from all the weather I'm looking at outside. How was yours?
It was good. I joke that this time of year I'm like Punxsutawney Phil. Everybody likes talking to me or seeing me because they know that racing in spring is right around the corner.
The Clash kind of long, and then it got pretty destructive. Were you able to enjoy it?
I was, and you know, that's not atypical for a super speedway race, and I can almost guarantee you that this coming Sunday with the Daytona 500, we'll probably have that inevitable big one that comes again. That's really the dynamic of super speedway racing when you've got cars racing in a pack like that, 40 approaching, you know, 200 plus miles an hour, nose to tail, you know, one small move, and the challenge is there's just so much on the line. I mean, this race is a game changer. It's a career changer for these drivers. So they're willing to take some risks and do some things they would not normally do. And one small mishap, and you could see something like you saw yesterday. And I can almost guarantee you're going to see something like that again this Sunday.
There's nothing like this sport, too, where you would think one of the biggest races of the season. Some people compare it to the Super Bowl of NASCAR, but it happens right away, too. It's so different.
It really is, and I've tried to get some clarity on why that is, and I've never gotten a really good answer why we kick off our season with arguably the biggest event of the year, which is perennially in the top 10 most watched sporting events, right up there with the Super Bowl and the Masters and you name it. But it's just part of the mystique that is NASCAR that we kick off the season with where it all started on the beaches of Daytona with our biggest event of the year, and that just adds, I think, some excitement to the start of the season.
And Scott, I actually saw next year tickets already on sale for the 500. They're running it on Valentine's Day, which would put what we just saw with the Clash and everything on Super Bowl Sunday, the week before. Have you heard anything about possibly moving the Clash and everything else that they're doing back a day to Saturday for next year?
You know, I haven't gotten any confirmation on that. I think they're targeting early April to announce and release the 2021 schedule. So that'll be really interesting to see that. I can't imagine they'd go up against, at least the 500 would not go up against the Super Bowl. But, you know, I'm not sure how they view the Clash, but that'll be interesting to see that.
And then when it comes to schedule changes, of course, Chicagoland Speedway has a schedule change in the NASCAR schedule as well as what it's called right now, the Chicagoland 400 this season.
That's right. June 18th through the 21st, 4 days of racing action. It's the one and only time the best stock car drivers in the planet come to our market. And we kick off NBC's portion of the racing season, the second half schedule, and we bill it as our NASCAR Summer Festival weekend. So anything that you think of when you think of a summer festival, whether it's a carnival, whether it's barbecue, camping, tailgating, music, that's what is going to be. That's what this weekend is defined by, and it's really one of those bucket list kind of items, and really something for everyone.
What goes into the decision of it being made to change the race dates and a different weekend. Is that something that NASCAR comes up with, or are you working with them to change the date?
Yeah, it's typically a collaboration between NASCAR, the track, and the broadcast partner. You know, sometimes you'll want to avoid, you know, putting two marquee events back-to-back with your broadcast partner, whether it's the U.S. Open, for example. We've got a bit of a hiatus on the schedule this year to avoid going head-to-head with the Olympics out of, you know, consideration to NBC, who's also televising the Olympics. So it's really a collaboration. And, of course, you always take into consideration what's in the best interest of the fans as well. So it's that's a lot goes into it. You know, when you move one, that kind of has a domino effect on several. So it's part art and part science when you're talking about the schedule composition.
So, Scott, the last 2 years, I mean, we had the slide job. Last year, Bowman gets his first win after that epic delay in rain. It was still a great race to see happen. If anybody stuck it out, it was well worth it. Is there any chance with all the changes coming to the schedule in 2021 that Chicagoland, God forbid, falls off or maybe becomes one of those weeknight races, like a Wednesday night race under the lights? Because we do have the ability to go under the lights at Chicago, which is not every track can do.
We do. And you know, I don't know yet. I mean, it'll be coming here before you know it. But we'll see how things shake out. But you're right. I appreciate you mentioning that. I mean, the move back to summer with those slicker temperatures on the racetrack has, I think, played a role in the phenomenal racing we've seen. In fact, USA Today did an article at the end of the year of the top 10 races and finishes in the last decade, and that 2018 slide job reference was number one. Think about that.
It was great.
The most exciting finish of the decade was right here at Chicagoland Speedway. That's really cool. So I have no doubt between the warmer track temperatures and the fact that NASCAR's really nailed the aerodynamic package on these mile-and-a-half ovals.
Yeah, they have.
That we will see some epic racing here this summer.
We're talking with Scott Paddock, the president of Chicagoland Speedway here. It's the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330. And Scott, that was one of the most fun times I've ever had at a racetrack in my entire life, that monsoon last year. But I can imagine a little bit of stress was going on around the racetrack. I mean, what goes through your mind when you're seeing the weather about to hit like it did?
Well, you know, with any sport or entertainment event, particularly one that's outdoors, you've got to have a plan. And every racetrack has an emergency action plan, and everyone's trained about what to do. You know, you hate that. That's the one thing that's beyond your control when you're talking about an outdoor event is Mother Nature. And, you know, in mid-June, you should have absolutely perfect seasonal temperatures, mid-70s. We just caught a bad break. But if I've learned one thing in this industry is if you have bad luck 1 year, chances are the odds will be in your favor and you'll have good luck the next year. So we're planning on a great weekend of weather and racing in 2020. But, yeah, it's a loyal fan base, and they stuck it out last year and ended up, I'm glad we delivered on a great finish for them to make it worth their while. But we're due for good weather in 2020.
I'm hoping for no Hurricane Chicagoland this year, that's for sure.
So being that this is Jimmy's last full-time run this season, anything you can share Chicagoland may have lined up special for him? I'm sure all the tracks are going to do a little something when he comes through just because such a legendary career coming to, I don't want to say an end because he didn't rule out the possibility of ever running again, but his full-time career.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. When you talk about the Mount Rushmore of NASCAR drivers, I mean, he's got to be among that elite group. I mean, having accomplished what only Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt Sr. have done in winning the Cup Championship 7 times. So we've got a couple things planned. Ironically, every track can pick and get assigned a driver to promote their event weekend. We opted for Jimmy this year, not knowing he was going to be retiring from full season racing when we booked him. So that's really cool. So he'll be up here in May. He's going to throw out the first pitch at Wrigley Field. We've got a lot of fun stuff planned, but he'll be here in May promoting that June race. And then during our event weekend on Sunday, the 21st of June, we've got something really cool inside the garage area called the Green Flag Garage. It's a cool brunch, and Jimmy's going to be the headline act, posing for pictures, signing autographs, and doing a Q&A with our race fans. And fans can learn more at chicagolandspeedway.com. But and then the last thing we're doing is just to have a little fun with the Daytona 500. We've got an offer running. Fans can go onto our website right now, and if they buy a ticket to that Chicagoland 400 on June 21st between now and Sunday's Daytona 500, if Jimmy Johnson or Kyle Busch win the 500, you get a full refund, and you're coming to our race for free. So,
what?
Pretty
That's
good
cool.
offering, pretty good odds. I mean, those are pretty two good names that have a good shot at winning this Sunday.
And that goes between when? Thursday and the Daytona 500?
So from right now until an hour before the start of the race on Sunday, ChicagolandSpeedway.com, look for the Daytona 2020 offer. Click on that. Buy your ticket. And if Jimmy or Kyle wins, you win and you're coming to our race for free.
Wow. Well, there's always something great that's going on over the summer at Chicagoland Speedway. Scott, tickets are on sale right now at ChicagolandSpeedway.com. Do you have a pick for the Daytona 500 this weekend?
Wow. You know what? I'm actually going to go with Kyle Busch. And believe it or not, he's probably arguably been the most successful and decorated driver over the last 5 years or so. But the one piece of hardware missing from his trophy cabinet is that Harley Earl Trophy. He's never won the Daytona 500. So I think this is the year he's going to break the ice. And I think fans that buy a ticket to our race are going to come for free because he's going to win this Sunday.
He is Scott Paddock. He's picking Kyle Busch this weekend, and I think I have to agree with you as well, Scott. President of the Chicagoland Speedway, thank you so much for joining us here on the Racing Rundown.
Hey, thanks a lot. It's always a pleasure going on your airways. Thanks for having me.
We'll take two tires and a splash of fuel. It's the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330. It's a big weekend in NASCAR. Jackson and Thomas are here to talk about it. Welcome back to the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330 and SportsFanRockford.com.
Guess we kind of got to switch up that little rejoiner there going forward, Thomas.
Yeah.
So we're now joined by Lou Lombardo as well this year for the 2020 season. It's a big weekend in NASCAR, as the big voice guy mentioned. Daytona 500 coming up tomorrow. And it could not be coming at a better time here in mid-February, because I don't know how long the XFL would actually be holding my attention. Good to be here with you guys. A lot to talk about so far. Big thanks once again to Scott Paddock, the president of the Chicagoland Speedway, for jumping on and joining us here a little bit earlier in the week and in the last segment there. Daytona, guys. Thomas, when you think of your favorite Daytona 500 memory, what comes to mind?
First thing that comes to mind is the closest finish, where they're off by like a hair.
This was a couple years ago?
Yeah.
I feel like there have been a couple. The Talladega one was crazy last year, and I think about that, too, at the very end of that Talladega race, too.
Who was it? Was it Truex and Hamlin? That it came like, it was a photo finish? Like, they had to, like, look at photographs
and figure
it out?
It was Truex and Hamlin.
Yeah.
Like, they were off by just a little bit. But yeah, that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think Daytona and finishes or, you know, memorable anything.
Daytona 500, Lou, what comes to mind?
Juan Pablo Montoya hitting the jet dryer. How do you not? I mean, the guy set the track on fire. Literally set the track on fire by hitting the jet dryer.
I forgot about that.
2012. I mean, it was already like the middle of the night, and he comes around. Nobody still knows what happened to that car. And the craziest thing, we're talking about a guy who's won the Indy 500. We're talking about a guy who's been a champion. No. That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about the guy who hit the jet dryer and set the track on fire.
I love Juan Pablo Montoya.
I love that Junior went out and got the car from Chip Ganassi. So, like, if you watch that race or the replay of it, or clips or whatever, yeah, you see the whole thing happen, and that's fine. But then all of a sudden, like, there's a part where Junior and Brad Keselowski are in a foot race to the porta potty. That happens during the whole time that they're trying to put the fire on the track out, which is awesome. Those two just racing to a bathroom is just fun. But then Junior has talked about like how after he reached out to Chip Ganassi and he's like, "Hey, can I have the car? You guys aren't going to fix that. I mean, the thing is gone." And he was like, "Yeah, you can have it." He put it in his graveyard, but the rule is like no one can ever take a picture of it or video of it. But it's sitting in Junior's graveyard that he's got of all the wrecked cars. Hitting that, I mean, that's just an iconic moment. It's just crazy. It's just crazy that you hit that thing. No one hits that thing.
I love everything about that story. I love everything. Except for Ganassi saying that you're not able to take pictures of it.
Yeah.
Why not?
I don't know.
Why not?
I don't know.
Are you trying to draw traffic to Junior's house so people could go see it in person?
It may be. Maybe it was like a, you know, we don't want people to get our secrets kind of a thing. I don't know. But
at this point, though.
Then gut the car.
Right.
Yeah. Who cares?
Right.
Just
right.
Gut it.
I think it is gutted at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's how much can be left?
What do you take a forklift to pick that thing up? I mean, you can't tow it. The thing was it was completely on fire.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just love that video of like, and even you hear Darrell Waltrip like, "What happened? What's on fire? Oh man, did that thing blow up?" And they're like, "No, I think he hit it." And they're like, "No, he didn't hit it." And they go back like, "Oh, yeah, he hit it."
Yeah, this was a caution lap. It wasn't even a cool down lap, and it was something where the guys in the booth were probably trying to just talk about, you know, the Simpsons or something else coming up a little bit later on, and just promoting some other program.
And there he is on fire. It's a real Ricky Bobby moment.
It was amazing.
It was great.
2012, that was?
I believe it was 12. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
1998. I sat in the car. I was about to play hockey for the 1 year that I played hockey, and we were sitting in the car. My dad did not want to go to watch because the Daytona 500 was on, so he was at home. We were listening to the, and I don't know if it was MRN at the time, but the call for Dale Earnhardt winning his first Daytona 500 at the very end. And I love the radio calls for NASCAR too, because it makes it seem like everything is the last lap. But when something is that big in the sport, when a person's been trying to win the big one for the longest time, and then he finally does, and you see that, and he's a good guy, and he's one of your favorites, that I'll never forget. Was just sitting in the parking lot outside of an elementary school.
Every guy lined up on pit lane to slap his hand as he drove through, and he couldn't even get himself over to victory lane because it was just people wanted to slap the car, slap his hand, whatever it was. That was an iconic moment for Daytona, probably the most iconic.
It really was, and I shared this with you guys in a group text when we were watching the Clash the other day, but all-time top 10s at restrictor plate races, Dale Earnhardt, his average finish was like 9.7 in all restrictor plate races. Better, he beat everybody else by more than five positions. Earnhardt Jr., his kid, second. And our pole sitter for the Daytona 500 tomorrow, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., in third, all-time. Ahead of Ernie Irvin, ahead of Mark Martin, ahead of Davey Allison, ahead of the all-time greats, even Denny Hamlin, who has had a hell of a run at the Daytona 500 here recently. All-time top 10s, number three, sitting on the pole for tomorrow's race. And Lou, I know that you're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I hate him. I really just don't like him. I hate that he has the pole. He's just a problem. He bugs me. He bugs me.
That's the one guy in all of NASCAR.
Yeah,
that you just
I'm
can't stand.
Like the Kyle Busch thing. I'm like, ah, it's cool. I'm all right with that. Like, he's not my favorite guy in the world, but I don't mind him being like a cocky because he backs it up. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. I don't know. He just causes accidents and then like a little weasel. I don't know. Just he bugs me.
And Thomas, we made a lot of jokes about him last year, 2019.
Yeah. Uh huh. You can always count on him for a wreck. You just can't.
Yeah, well, at least we're going to get it out of the way early this year. Yeah. He's leading, so we'll get the wreck out of the way and then a race.
Not, guys, not early. I don't want him to take out the whole field.
Just the front half. Don't worry about it.
It happened two times in one race a couple of years ago, and so now he's got this big stigma against him.
Sure.
Ricky Stenhouse Jr. is very good at these races, and as we pick who we think we're going to win, I might have him on that list in a little bit. But we've got some changes coming up to Daytona this year, Thomas?
We do. Well, just kind of not huge things, I guess. Well, kind of, maybe. I'll just say them.
We'll decide. We'll be the judge.
There we go. Darrell Waltrip has retired, and this is the first year Fox will be broadcasting without him. So no more boogity, boogity, boogity when we go across the start-finish line.
Yeah, don't worry, Jeff Gordon will be saying the wrong information, though, as it happens.
Gordon needs a third guy up there with him, I feel.
I heard him call Clint Bowyer Kevin Harvick four times during the practices last weekend.
The thing about Gordon, he's knowledgeable.
Yeah,
I think
awkward.
He's good at conveying everything. Yeah, he's a bit awkward at first. Like, Gordon's kind of the grower, you know? You don't like him right away. You never really do, but he'll kind of just grow on you in time, and people are like, oh, yeah, you know, that guy's not all that bad. And it took me forever because I did not like the Rainbow Warrior gimmick and all of that, you know, the young Hollywood kid. I wasn't a big fan of him during his racing career, but as an analyst in the booth, I thought he was great. I've got a feeling we're going to miss DW a lot more than maybe we thought we were going to a year ago at this time.
Oh, absolutely. Look, am I the only one that thinks the broadcast is better on NBC?
No.
No.
It's just better, right? It's a better product.
Post-race is amazing.
Yeah,
that's
I agree.
For sure.
I agree.
Can we merge the two somehow?
We just make one person carry it? One network carry it?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
The only thing about NBC that I'm not a huge fan of is that they've got the announcing team, but then they've got the secondary team with Jeff Burton and Dale Earnhardt Jr. over on the other side.
Yeah.
And it just kind of throws too many voices in
there
the
There are a
booth.
Lot of voices, you're right.
And then you've got, what's the name of the guy that runs around outside?
Rutledge Woods.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Rutledge, yeah.
Are we a fan of him?
I like him.
I like him.
Okay.
He's fun.
All right.
He's not hurting anything, is all it is. You know what I mean? He's not helping, but he's also not hurting.
He always is having fun, and yes. I can appreciate that about him. But I guess I don't really care what the fans are doing in their section. You know, it's some of it seems kind of forced to me. But either way, NBC overall, I do think, has the better production package. Do you think that Fox ends up going to a third man at some point here if this thing doesn't work?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they definitely will.
Even if they just rotated like a guest
yep.
in there just to call the races, that would work too.
See, that'd be kind of fun. That would be kind of fun. And maybe try out McMurray too.
Yeah.
I like him when they go
yep.
to that other studio with the green screen back there or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Yeah, he was over the last weekend during the practices, he was in for Larry McReynolds in his little control room. Oh, yeah. I liked when they went to McMurray. It was all right. So I kind of thought the same thing. It's funny you said that, but I wouldn't mind seeing him, you know, young blood get introduced up there. Not that Gordon's old, but
right.
you know, I think that's a good balance, young it up a little bit, like NBC did when they put Junior up there. You know, it's they get it.
I just think they need a third guy.
Yeah, I agree.
Is all, and I think that Gordon can be good. The problem with Gordon, too, with Daryl Waltrip is that they didn't really seem to get along right away either. There was that awkwardness mm-hmm. for the first year or so where mm-hmm. it just seemed like DW didn't like Gordon and Gordon was constantly like fighting uphill. It was almost like his racing career when Dale Earnhardt didn't really like him either. I don't know, but we'll see what ends up happening. I think that the clash got some of the nerves out. We'll see a better call from Gordon going forward in the Daytona 500 tomorrow. Previous winners. You guys remember Justin Haley last summer? Mm-hmm. Thomas?
I do, yeah.
That was one of the hardest shows that we've done because we had to look up who exactly Justin Haley was.
Yep.
I kept on calling him J.J. Yaley.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
So he's going to be making, if he does make the field this time, it would be his fourth NASCAR start. That was his third one he won last year. Denny Hamlin's won a couple of times in the last few years as well. A couple 500s in there. I didn't realize that he was mm-hmm. racking them up in the last three or four years. We've had Eric Jones, we've had Austin Dillon, we've had Stenhouse, Kurt Busch, Keselowski, Denny Hamlin, Dale Earnhardt Jr. in 2015. It feels like forever ago. And then Joey Logano as well for the last few years, winners at Daytona. When it comes to three drivers to look out for, it's more of a lottery pick for this type of race, the restrictor plates.
It's a crapshoot is what it is.
It really is. Thomas, who do you have for your three drivers this week?
Well, I have Denny Hamlin. We saw him in the clash and how he was on a mission. You know, he started dead last, worked his way up, I think, eight positions in three laps. I can expect him, if he starts, you know, further back, I can see him working his way to the front. And he's going for two Daytona 500 wins in a row and also going for his third. So it's like, there's a lot on the line for this one. I feel like he's going to fight for it to make it, you know, two 500s in a row and his third win. I feel like that's something he's going to go for.
That'd be three in 5 years for Denny Hamlin.
Yeah, and that's quite the record. That's a driver you want to have. That when you know has record of winning the Daytona 500 multiple times in a recent amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got the team to do it. He's got the car to do it. And he's probably driving the best he's ever had in his career, at least in 2019. We'll see if he can carry it over.
Yep. Chase Elliott, great second practice and qualifying speeds. We also saw him fighting with Kyle Larson in the clash for the lead. Not to mention, I forget who said it on Twitter, but when they went under red flag for the clash, he parked his car sideways. And he was on the backstretch. He parked his car sideways on the track, knowing that the TV cameras would zoom in on him so his team could see what was wrong with the car.
That's smart.
I think that's really smart, and it's thinking differently like that is going to get him into victory lane this year.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something you learn to do because your dad's Bill Elliott. You know what I mean?
That too, yes.
That's not something that you teach necessarily, but your dad's Bill Elliott, you pick up stuff like that.
Yeah, it really is. Another funny, random Daytona 500 memory now. Sterling Marlin, I don't know how well you remember
when he got out
him.
To fix his own car?
And he said he saw Dale Earnhardt do it once, and Earnhardt was like,
"That's so great.
Never saw that. Never did that." He got out in a red flag, and it's like he was adjusting his... Lou, who do you have for your three drivers?
Well, look, Kyle Busch, right? When can you rule him out? Never.
Never.
He's never won the 500. You know, you light a fire under his ass, and you don't know what's going to happen. He's always a guy on a mission, and I think probably even more so at the 500 because he's never done it. Chase Elliott, I'm with you right there. He's my guy that I think has turned some really good laps at Daytona. Smart driver. You know, he's at the top of the list right now for up and of the younger drivers. He's got to be leading that whole class. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he ends up winning this thing. And I'm going to say go out on a limb.
That might be a breakout year for him, too.
It might be. Yeah, it very well might
It be. Might be time for Chase Elliott.
Yeah.
With
right.
these new Chevy changes, too, maybe mm-hmm. they've caught up a little bit to Toyota.
Right.
Could be a big year.
And look, I'm going to go out on a limb with Jimmy. I mean, he's, I think, a 20-1 odd right now, or at least he was last time I looked. And you know, not his last run at the 500 because it's his last full season. He may make that run again. Mm-hmm. But I think it would just be really great to see him not only lock in the playoff spot right out of the gate, and then that monkey is off his back, but just one more 500 under his belt. And it would just be beautiful to see that happen. So that's where and maybe that's a little bit more fanboy going for Jimmy. But I'll tell you what, during the practices, he was running 190, 193 consistently. I mean, he had a high speed. I don't know. I think it's he's got the potential to do it.
And he's a bit of a dark horse, too. 20-1, not a bad pick for him.
No.
Maybe?
No.
What are the best odds right now?
Best odds?
As we were talking about this over the break, too.
Nothing shocking. I mean, Logano 10-1, Hamlin 10-1, Elliott 10-1, Bush 10-1.
See, I think Hamlin might be a little bit low. I think you could get some good value on Hamlin. Even at 10-1, you put $10 on him, you win 100 because he wins his second in a row and third in 5 years. He's coming off the best year of his career. I mean, I'm surprised it's 10-1, to be honest with him.
I'll tell you what, drop a couple bucks on Corey LaJoie while you're at it. If all hell breaks loose and this guy wins, it's 200-1.
Wow, yeah. $20 would get me. All right. Thinking about it.
Austin Dillon's won the 500. Why can't Corey LaJoie? What's the difference, right? Austin Dillon and Dale Earnhardt have won the same number of Daytona 500s. That's a disturbing fact.
It should have been Bubba.
Yes, I'd have been all right with that. I like Bubba.
Three drivers I got this week, and for the Daytona 500, for Talladega as well. You spin the wheel. And the way that Yahoo used to do their fantasy things, I talked about this last year, Thomas, ad nauseum, but just the way that they used to do their fantasy leagues. I was a huge fan of breaking it down into groups where the A drivers were the best, the B drivers were the middling ones that could surprise you on a given week. The C drivers are the ones that thrive in the super speedways and the Daytona 500s. The Trevor Baines, the Justin J.J. Yaley Haleys, those guys. So I'm going with Chris Buescher. Two top fives in 2018, by the way. Two top fives for Chris Buescher at Daytona. Plus, he's got a really good paint scheme, and I kind of like the 37 car. He had a decent year last year. Dover, he was running pretty well.
50-1 as of right now. He's a 50-1.
Book it. Okay, don't book it. Think about it, and then maybe book it. Eric Jones won in July of 2018. He was third in the Daytona 500 last year. He's also got a big year because there's another person that's staring him down, driving in another car, the 95. Eric Jones needs to have himself a good year, and I don't think he's going to have Denny Hamlin pushing him this time. I do think, however, that he knows how to stay out of enough trouble in these big super speedways. Dude's only 24 years old. Dude's got so much potential, and I think he can shine tomorrow. And then the guy that I think is going to win it from the pole, third in restrictor plate races all time. And I know that you guys aren't a big fan of Ricky Stenhouse Jr., but he's good enough to be there for a reason.
Remember when we used to be friends? That was fun.
He just drives like an idiot sometimes. Like he just...
Yeah.
There's a couple...
Anytime the car is on.
There's a couple momentary lapses of reason with him where he thinks he can fit his car into a small area and he doesn't have that big of an area. You know, if he just limits that. Or maybe just stays out in front because he was a half a second better than everybody else while qualifying. If he just stays out front the entire time, Stenhouse could, you know, come back with a second Daytona win of all time. So those are our three.
Actually, I don't think I said my dark horse.
Oh, who is it?
Alex Bowman. He's third year starting front row.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And Hendrick Motorsports, like you said, you know, with Jimmy Johnson, they're all running really well this year.
They are. They're running really well. He's got potential there too, man. I don't think as much as Chase. I think Chase has that, you know, leading that younger pack. But Bowman, right there, right there.
Couple of Hendrick drivers that you chose, Thomas.
Yeah, Team Hendrick.
Yeah, they're typically up there in the Daytona 500.
Yeah, it's not dumb.
So those are our three. You can feel free to submit yours on Twitter at SportsFan1330. We're going to be doing this thing once a week here on Saturdays. The podcast goes up. Prior to, as we record this, typically on Thursdays, I'll have it up there by Thursday night, just previewing the next race. We'll talk more about the Daytona 500 fallout. Any big news coming up next week, you could see it at sportsfanrockford.com right around Thursday night. And we've got the airing going on Saturday morning at 10. It's going to be a fun year, guys. One of 38.
Yeah.
One of 38. It felt weird not doing the Racing Rundown for the first few weeks, and I'm glad to be getting back into this thing.
Yeah, same here. This is great.
That's the voice of Lou Lombardo, Thomas Gomez. I'm Jackson. It's the Racing Rundown. We'll see you next week.